if I was here with issues and that's why I had stayed, then that would be a different story. Yeah, I'd be a little bit heartbroken. But we don't have any issues, so no broken hearts.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else? The Iditarod, which can be a game of adjustments. I'm your host, Casey Grove. The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM. Before we get too far off track, here's a word from the folks that help us pay for this.
Hello, I'm Holly from our development and marketing team. You help Alaska Public Media bring Alaskan stories to the world stage with programming like the Iditapod with your financial support. Consider donating today and visit alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. Thanks.
Yes, thanks for coming along with us on this journey. That was Nick Petit in Nikolai at the start of today's episode. You know, Nick in Nick. We'll have more from Nick coming up. That's both Nick Petit and the village of Nikolai. Nick Petit is the first musher to complete his mandatory 24-hour rest pretty early in the race there in Nikolai, about a quarter of the way into the race. And today we'll get into the general strategy of those 24-hour layovers. We'll also hear from community members in Nikolai about the village of about 125 residents being fully open to visitors this year for the first time since the dark specter of COVID descended on the race. And mushers are dealing with banged up sleds, banged up bodies, and having to drop dogs after bumping their way through the most technically challenging sections of trail. They're also still dealing with that heat, so we'll hear more about that coming up. Plus, a listener question and a speedy dog of the day who's actually learning to take it a little easier. Back to the 24s, though, it seems like taking it easy is a strategy that some teams are employing, not all of them, but they're out there fighting that warm weather still, and some mushers are choosing to take their 24s earlier than they had initially planned. It looks like the two teams that had been out front, Jesse Holmes and reigning champ Brent Sass, are sticking with their race plans and taking their 24s in Ophir, the ghost town checkpoint with a full-time population of zero. That's about 350 miles into the 1,000-mile race. As our friend Zach Hughes, who now works for the Anchorage Daily News and was a former reporter here on the Iditapod, pointed out on Twitter, Jesse Holmes is actually running a race schedule that's almost identical to Brent Sass's winning run last year. If you match them up as he did in a graphic on Twitter, they look almost exactly the same. It's kind of amazing. Right now, they're in the same place, Ophir. The population of Iditarod mushers in Ophir today grew to three when the team of Alberta musher Aaron Peck arrived this morning. And then Wade Mars, according to the GPS tracker, has gone through Ophir. For now, he's leading the Iditarod and apparently heading all the way to the Iditarod checkpoint. That's another ghost town and about 430 miles into the race. So Wade Mars slipping into the lead as of the time of this recording. But back in Takotna at about mile 330 are Ryan Reddington, Richie Deal, and this year's Kuskokwim 300 champion Pete Kaiser, actually a seven-time K300 champ. We, a few years ago, stopped saying repeat or repeat because it just got to be too many re's. But yeah, Pete Kaiser, also a former Iditarod champion. He's the only musher right now in the top 20, currently with all 14 dogs. Meanwhile, Brent Sass is down to 11 dogs. Here he is earlier in the race in Nikolai, where he arrived with a young dog named Marty in his sled bag.
I've been carrying a lot of dogs. I carried this guy for 60 miles, so that was fun. But yeah, you know, nothing goes to plan ever. Luckily, I'm used to that in my life. There's nothing that goes to plan in my life, so.
So Marty, one of the three dogs that Brent Sass has had to drop so far. Brent finished his winning run last year with 11 dogs. That's what he has right now. But his team still has about 650 miles to go as of today. Matt Hall, like Brent Sass, a former 1,000-mile Yukon Quest champion, he had to drop a young dog of his own.
I just dropped one, which is my first one. He was the youngest one on the team. He was a two-year-old, and just a mild sore wrist. And actually, he got out of the sled bag here, and I joked to the vet, that's the healthiest drop dog you'll ever see. He just walked off like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. So maybe he was faking it. I don't know.
There's no faking a broken sled, though. All the mushers can do is deal with that, maybe improvise a fix. We've heard about tree branches being used in that way. And they just have to try to keep riding that thing down the trail to where hopefully they have another sled stashed. That was the case for Ryan Reddington of Knick, who was in Nikolai changing the plastic on one of his sled runners and talking to our reporter Lex Trinan when he he noticed a problem.
Sorry, I just see a crack in my runner here. I'll be changing sleds now and McGrath. Yeah, hopefully that makes it to McGrath.
Spoiler alert, the sled did make it, the roughly 50 miles from Nicolai to McGrath, and Reddington's team then continued on to Takotna. And to explain what he meant by changing sleds, ahead of the race, mushers are allowed to send a spare dog sled to a checkpoint of their choosing, maybe anticipating damage or wanting to switch to a lighter sled later in the race, maybe a different configuration of sled bags and sled. The rules actually say they can use up to 3 different sleds, that includes the one they start with, but the sleds can be expensive, as is the shipping out to these remote rural communities, some of them just ghost towns. So often they'll just send out 1 backup sled, if at all. I think some mushers will send out 2 different sleds to 2 different checkpoints, so they have options depending on what happens. That can also factor into a musher's decision on where to take that 24-hour layover. Makes sense if you're changing sleds that you might want a little bit of extra time to take care of that. And with those 24s, this is really where we start to see the race take shape. The start differential, that is the difference between mushers' race starts at 2-minute intervals out of Willow, is added to their 24-hour break, so when they've completed those layovers, everybody is on equal ground as far as the race clock. Of course, the mushers might be taking those 24s at different checkpoints, so while Jesse Holmes and Brent Sass were the first to arrive in Ophir, that was about midnight last night, mushers like Ryan Reddington, Richie Deal, and Pete Kaiser will be coming off of their 24s before Holmes and Sass, albeit farther back on the trail. I would expect that chase pack of Reddington, Deal, and Kaiser to then pass Wade Morris because he'll still be on his 24-hour break, and then I would think that they would then become the lead pack. But you never know. We'll see what happens. Sometimes those 24s are taken according to carefully laid out plans from before the race, and then sometimes the mushers have to augment the plan based on what actually happens in the race. What's been happening so far is really warm, sunny days, and the mushers are trying to avoid the heat of the day to keep their dogs' energy up. The sun was again beating down on mushers and their dogs in Nicolai yesterday afternoon. As our guy Lex Trinan reports, that sun was enough to keep some teams resting longer and earlier than they had expected.
Veteran Nick Petit's team is the first into Nicolai early on Tuesday morning. The musher is happy to visit the checkpoint at the school, where volunteers serve him some hot food.
So what's for dinner?
We have bacon.
Ooh.
Bacon.
Bacon and bacon. That's a good start.
A few hours later, in the heat of the midday sun, he's lounging on his sled, snacking on, well, more bacon. He's in no hurry right now as he takes an unexpected early 24-hour rest, which mushers are required to complete once along the trail. His strategy?
Stay away from that big thing in the sky there.
The sun and the trail behind them factored into many mushers' decisions to stop in Nicolai on Tuesday. Temperatures soared above freezing, about 15 degrees above average for the small Athabascan village on the banks of the Kuskokwim River. A few mushers took advantage of the heat themselves, napping in their sleds or on jackets on the snow. Mila Porsild is also hoping for a nap, but first has to switch out the strips of plastic that cover the runners of her sled. The plastic got scratched going over the exposed farewell burn area, where mushers often encounter ice and windblown ground.
There was no ice on top of the dirt, and weirdly enough, I think that provided more control.
Still, she says, the trail into the checkpoint was challenging, and she had to send 3 injured dogs home from here, but it wasn't as bad as she feared. Iditarod officials had warned mushers to brace for the worst moguls in race history. Matt Hall also was pleasantly surprised.
I was prepared for the worst it's ever been, which puts me here with smiles, because it's like, oh man, that was actually nice.
Hall is happy to wait out the sun and enjoy his successful last run. Nearby, Matt Failer is dishing out water for his resting dogs as he prepares to leave the checkpoint. His race schedule has his team running in the heat of the sun, something he's not too excited about.
I mean, it'd be nice to sit here in the heat of the, you know, and just let them rest, but kind of got to keep moving down the trail, so. We were able to get them out of the heat yesterday, but they're going to have to run a few hours in the heat now.
But he says he's got to keep moving down the trail. Reporting in Nicolai, I'm Lex Trinan.
Thanks for that, Lex. And hanging out in Nicolai for a moment, the Iditarod's presence in that Athabascan village on the Koyukuk River is looking a lot more like it did before the COVID-19 pandemic. That's despite the race no longer requiring COVID vaccines or mandatory testing. Still, Nicolai Edzino Tribe First Chief Vernon John said the community was ready to have guests back this year.
It's pretty good to have it back and seeing people move around this morning all excited, you know.
John says the tribal council did not have to debate whether to host the Iditarod checkpoint this year because everyone was in favor of it. Resident and tribal administrator Kristen Wills says people in Nicolai are ready to return to normal traditions.
COVID is going to be around for a while, but we don't want it to hold us back anymore, you know. We don't want to lose our tradition, and we're just going to keep going on with things.
Wills says the community is also restarting its annual spring carnival celebrations later this March for the first time in 3 years. I suppose some sunny weather would be good for their carnival and all the different spring celebrations happening in communities across Alaska. But at least in the short term, it looks like the Iditarod Trail might be cooling off. And now I'm joined by an actual weather forecaster. This is Bobby Bianco at the National Weather Service Forecast Office in Fairbanks.
Yeah, I mean, today we're going to continue to stay warm. Our temperatures right now are right around 30 to 32 degrees around the area, going from McGrath to Tekotna, Shagaluk as well, right around 30 to 32. And going to the afternoon, we'll be increasing our temperatures up into the mid-30s, which is around 10 to 15 degrees above normal for this time of the year. So it is very warm out in the southwest once you get towards especially McGrath. We had the high temperatures yesterday, right around 40 degrees there. So there has been some melting snow, some water on top of the snow, which froze overnight and is probably going to remelt again today. So it's going to be sloppy conditions. And once we get towards tomorrow as well, we'll be dropping down. We have a cold front moving through, and we'll see our temperatures drop.
Gotcha. So how about kind of a little bit further out over the next couple of days, how cold do we think it'll be getting?
Yeah, so we're looking at our high temperatures for going into tomorrow, Thursday. We'll be seeing our high temperatures in the mid to upper 20s. Right now for McGrath, we do have 27 to 28 degrees as a high temperature. And then going into Friday, our high temperatures dropping even further into the teens and lower 20s. Overnight lows, so let's say for tonight, we'll be in the teens. And they continue to drop from there. So Thursday night will be below zero, or single digits below zero. Anywhere from about 0 to 10 below will be our lows for Thursday night. And then Friday night will be dropping around the single digits below zero yet again.
All right, Bobby. Now, if you could just try to put yourself in the mindset of a sled dog, and if you could understand English as a sled dog and you heard this weather report, what would you think about that?
I'd be a little worried about sinking into the snow because we're going to be getting these warmer temperatures and the snow's going to be softening up. So I would be a little bit worried that, again, soft snow is not really great for walking on, especially running on. So, however, once we do freeze up, everything should, get more solid, so it'll be more of a solid groundwork that we'll be working with getting into the weekend, but the next couple days might be a little messy.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're going to be happy about the cooler temperatures being
covered
in fur and whatnot.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, last question, Bobby. If you were a sled dog, would your name still be Bobby, or would you have a different name?
Oh, man, I've actually never thought about this. It might be like Babishka.
That's a good one. Yeah. Babishka. Thank you for entertaining that ridiculous question. I appreciate
it. No problem.
And thanks for the weather report. I appreciate that too.
Yeah, of course. Anytime.
The meteorological conditions at any given moment are definitely going to factor into mushers' plans, and that includes what they're wearing. And that brings us to today's listener question.
This is Adrian Hills in Erie, Pennsylvania. I'm representing the Iditarod and Ispinarod competitors. We'd like to know more about the mushers' favorite base layers to wear for the extreme cold and wind while still needing to be flexible and nimble on the trail. And what is the most number of layers a musher can remember ever wearing? Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Adrian. Lex talked to Matt Hall about this one.
One, two, three, four, five. All right, so without my bibs, I'm wearing five pairs of thermals just on my bottom half. So I would lose count if I told you what I'm wearing overall. But then the bibs go on top of that. So just my legs have six layers right now.
And that's pretty standard you run with.
It is. Like, it's not how normal people dress, I suppose. But I like thermal on top of thermal because it's super, super lightweight, not really restricting at all. And then the bibs on over it, so it's really easy to run, it's really easy to kick, it's really easy to jog. It's a pain in the bottom when you're going to, like, change. But yeah, lots of layers.
And do you bring a whole extra set of those five layers on for top and bottom?
I do. Not five sets, you know, just, like, one of each. And then I'll kind of switch out. Like, yesterday up in... after the Rainy Pass checkpoint, it was hotter than this, and I actually stripped down and was shirtless, getting a sunbathe for like 15, 20 minutes. And that under thermal, the underest one was, you know, pretty wet, so I just like draped that over the sled, put my spare set on to get in my sleeping bag, which is now what I'm wearing now, but that set I was wearing, provided it's now used and stinky, dried in the sun, and is now my emergency set again if need be.
Does it feel pretty good to finally take it off at the end of the race and get some clean clothes?
It does, very, very much so, yes.
No question about that. Changing out of those clothes that have been recycled for a week and a half must feel good and smell better. And I suppose a hot shower and a hot meal would also go along with that. And to explain how our listener questions work, the best way to do that is to send a clip of audio of yourself asking the question. Most smartphone apps have a pretty easy-to-use voice memo app. You record yourself asking your question about dog mushing or the Iditarod. Tell us your name, tell us where you're at, and then email that to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. Yesterday, we had a question about where retired sled dogs end up, whether they get adopted out or what. And in some cases, that is what happens. They do get adopted out. And it turns out there are different organizations that do that. One is the August Foundation, and one of our listeners, Amy Peterson, actually mentioned that to us. So I thought I'd give her a call to just hear about what her experience has been like.
Hello?
Hi, is this Amy?
Yes, this is Amy.
Hey,
it's Casey.
It's Casey, yeah.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I did want to talk to you just about what your experience has been like with adopting sled dogs.
Yeah, it's been awesome, honestly. Like I said in my email earlier, I'm on my third retired sled dog. I've had a couple at the same time, but right now I just have one, and they're honestly just great pets. And, you know, I've worked for a small operation with small team of dogs before, and so I understand their working life. And so then to be able to give them a really great retired life is just awesome. They love to just go for regular old walks like any typical dog. But I've done some skidjoring with some of them, lots of hiking and then just camping. And they're just a great companion for sure.
So you probably heard, you know, we have these dog profiles that we do every day. So I'm going to ask you now to describe your dogs for me. What are their names and, you know, personalities? What are they like?
Yeah. So right now I have a dog named Joe. And he is kind of shy, to everyone else, in the world, but he loves me and he's the most affectionate dog that I've ever owned. He loves scratches and belly rubs and, he loves to just go on walks or hikes with me. And then I've had some other really great dogs too that are just like, most of these guys are pretty socialized, but kind of introverted. All of the dogs that I've had are kind of introverted dogs, which I appreciate. And yeah, they just love to either be active and hiking and walking, or they love to just like lay on a dog bed inside and sleep most of the day too. So it kind of just depends on the day.
I could relate to that part of it.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Well, I should ask, too, maybe just with Joe, where did Joe come from?
Yeah, so he came from a small kennel in northern Minnesota. Amarek Kennel was the name of it, and just a small family that ran dogs and did a lot of like mid-distance races here in the Midwest area. And yeah, I think the musher Andrea had maybe about like 30, 40 dogs at the most. So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So kind of in your neighborhood or your neck of the woods down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just thinking about what would be a comparison between a dog in retirement and a person in retirement. You know, people, sort of the cliche thing is to be like, oh, I'm kicking my feet up on a beach with a drink, you know, like what's the dog yeah. version of that?
Well, so gosh, I mean, I always think about it as like dogs get to like lay on a couch inside, you know, they are, you know, these sled dogs are outside dogs, but then they get to just like be in the house and be a house dog kind of in their last years of retirement. And I will say I'm very fortunate that I actually live on a farm right now, and we have a pretty decent sized apple orchard that my sled dogs have been able to just like roam around and hang out in. And but then they get to come in at night and they don't have to sleep outside, if they get to just be in a cozy, nice, warm house. So
yeah, so the dog retirement equivalent to a human retirement is an apple orchard by day and a nice warm bed inside by night.
Yep, absolutely.
That's great. Well, Amy, thanks for talking to me. And I just, you know, I appreciate that you're one of the many people out there that has adopted retired sled dogs. So thanks for all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's my thing. I love it.
That sure sounds like a nice twilight to a dog life. Well, it's time for our dog of the day, and it's one that's not so old and not really young either. Right in that Goldilocks zone of being an ideal age for running 1,000 miles. Here's a different Matt Fahler, talking about a dog named Mach 10 that he says is very important to his team.
I think the cornerstone of our dog team lately has been a dog named Mach 10. She's kind of coming into her own at the age of 5. She's finally figured out how to slow down and trot. She's been loping and galloping her whole life, and she has been on our Cusco team in lead, you know, coming to multiple second place finishes now, and she's finished the Iditarod. But this year she's finally figured out how to just kind of get out of high gear and just trot, you know, but she still has the energy, but she just figured out how to slow down. So Mach 10, we're hoping to breed her in the future to kind of, you know, bring up some young pups. And so she will be running probably in swing or behind swing at the start of the Iditarod, and then later in the race we'll let her unleash a little bit. There are many mushers that want trotters because it's the most efficient gait for a four-legged animal. They spend the least amount of energy. You know, even a good pacer spends less energy than a dog that lopes. Now, there are a lot of mushers that want dogs that lope, but they do have to kind of figure out how to slow down and preserve themselves. We're going to all be traveling the same speed, so Mach 10's only issue was she would be loping when she could have been trotting to preserve some energy, so she's finally figured that out. I don't necessarily care what they do as long as they can do it the whole way. So I've got plenty of dogs that lope, and plenty of, like her father, Heisman, loped all the way to Nome several times. But again, it's just nice when they know how to slow down and kind of not waste all their energy.
So that's interesting. Matt Fahler's dog, Mach 10, learning to slow down to what, like Mach 5? That still sounds pretty fast. Matt has had some great names for dogs in his kennel. We really enjoyed a couple years ago hearing about his dogs named after heavy metal bands. He had one named Pantera. There's a bonus episode with Matt from back in season 3 talking about that, among other things. And real quick, Matt mentioned that Mach 10 was sometimes in the swing position. That's right behind the leader or leaders, which, you know, are at the front of the team. Behind the swing dogs are your general team dogs, and then the dogs right in front of the sled are referred to as wheel dogs. That's something we've talked about in past episodes, and I would encourage you fine listeners to scroll back in your Iditapod feeds to find all those old episodes. I kind of can't believe that we're up to season 7 now. Maybe that makes me ready for retirement, a nice nap on the couch after romping in an apple orchard or something like that. Still have so far to go. But that's all we have time for today. The Iditapod returns tomorrow with another full episode. In the meantime, you can find us at alaskapublic.org/Iditarod. That's our home for photos and stories from the trail, and you can sign up there for our special Iditarod newsletter if you haven't already. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. Thanks to our reporters Lex Trinan and Ben Matheson, and to Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon for all the editorial support. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Thanks to you for listening, and until next time, happy trails.
It didn't seem too bad to me at all. Last year it seemed like it was endless, and so I was just kind of preparing myself for, you know, what we went through last year, and it wasn't nearly anything like that. So
it's not just you getting tougher.
The more I do this, I don't think I get tougher. I think I get smarter, and I get kind of sick of that type of crap. So.